Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Adam Modest. This is Locked On NBA, brought to you by Built Bar. Head on over to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code Locked On to save $10 off your first order. Adam, we are 2 weeks away from players and teams heading out to Orlando, maybe, if there's an Orlando to go to.
That, I thought usually you tell a joke. That was it. I was waiting for the punchline.
Well, no, I think it's kind of crazy that, like, did 2 weeks being 2 weeks away, did that kind of sneak up on you? It kind of snuck up on me a little bit.
I mean, no, because it really does feel like we're 2 weeks away from being 4 weeks away. So, no. I mean, look, man. So this is actually an interesting thing when you talk about we're media members. So there's certain rhythms to what we do is when there's actual games. And so, yes, these players are going to be reporting and they're already back doing individual workouts, but are we going to talk to them? Or is there going to be access? Are we going to actually have information coming out of these? You know, one thing that happened this week, Anthony, a lot of players, I shouldn't say a lot, players tested positive for COVID. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Listening even to Brian Windhorst earlier today, doing a spot, he talked about that a lot of the cases that have been positive, positive tests haven't been reported on. So I wonder, so you ask, you know, are we excited? I wonder if 2 weeks from now, we're going to feel somewhat similar to what we do now, where it's like things are happening, but we're not sure what. And I kind of think that'll be a little bit of the case.
So this has been kind of interesting watching this all take place. This isn't how we were actually going to start the show. We were going to start by talking about security protocols because they were kind of leaked today. Vince Carter just decided to retire. So our third segment, we're going to talk about best dunkers of all time. But I actually think there's an interesting conversation to be had here. I think the NBA knew that they were going to get back some, if not, you know, many COVID positive tests this week when they did that testing. Sure. And I don't know that people paying attention on the exterior of the NBA had that same understanding. The response when there were players' names leaked who tested positive for COVID, there was a lot of like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And it's like, no, there's a reason they tested 2 weeks out before they headed out to Orlando. They wanted to make sure that they could minimize the number of tests that were going into the bubble.
Yeah.
And I guess that kind of disconnect between analysis and reality, there are one always exists, but that kind of really struck me is, wait, why are we reacting the way that we are to this?
Well, it's not even just a media thing. I think we also fans and everybody else. But, you know, Anthony, somebody asked me earlier in this week, Nikola Jokic, obviously I'm here in Denver. He tested positive. He'd been in Serbia for a couple of weeks and tested positive. And someone said, are you surprised? And I was thinking to myself, no, I'm not surprised. He just traveled. He was around a bunch of other people who tested positive, including tennis star Novak Djokovic, who he was right next to. So you kind of thought, okay, there's a good chance he's going to test. But when the news came out, I was still a little bit, it's not surprised, but I was shocked. It was still like a thing of like, oh, now it's real. Yeah. This thing that we had talked about in the abstract is now a thing that we're talking about that's literally going on. So, and I think a lot of people have had that sort of feeling over this. Are they surprised that there's a positive test? No, but there is that emotional sort of like, okay, now it's real that we're seeing this week. And, you know, the next couple of weeks will be interesting in that regard to see if it becomes, I don't want to say normal. That sounds almost, it sounds a bit harsh, calloused. But yeah, not even callous. Just, I wonder if it'll be like more of an acceptance of reality, which is what we live in, which is that, you know, this is sort of the nature of where we are. We're in a global pandemic.
Yeah. I really feel like, you know, I always have to be upfront when I say stuff like this. I make my living off of basketball. So if I had a preference, which my preference doesn't matter, my preference is obviously that we get basketball at some point as safely as we can possibly get it. But it's been kind of interesting to watch how many people have been so loud on the other side of that spectrum. And, you know, you and I were talking before we went live here. For as catastrophic as the scenarios that play out for those who are on the end of the spectrum that say there shouldn't be an NBA this season, for as catastrophic as that scenario might be, there's a similarly catastrophic scenario on the other end of this. If they don't come back, that doesn't risk human life or it doesn't risk future health of these players, but you are risking the future health of this league and the ramifications from that. We know what that looks like if they don't come back this season. We don't necessarily know what it looks like if they try this out in Orlando. And you know, from, and maybe that's my own biases that are kind of convincing me, like, hey, this is actually okay. That maybe this is me convincing myself that I should be more, you know, to get myself to be more okay with this. But at the end of the day, you know, finding out that people are testing positive for COVID 2 weeks before they head out to Orlando, like, that's a planned thing. Yeah. This is part of the NBA's plan. They aren't just shooting from the hip on any of this stuff.
And I think that, and we can maybe segue now into some of the safety precautions that the league has taken, because as the details come out, the league really has done a lot of work on this. I know some people have been critical of this or that, but the league is, you know, it would be a disaster for them to have a serious outbreak, you know, that affects the entire bubble of people. They don't want that to happen. And the same goes for security. I hate to say this, Anthony, but we saw some of the security stuff today, Tim Bontemps, ESPN, reporting on some of the details. There's also something about gathering this many high profile people in one isolated location that, you know, there is an important, security is actually extra important in this instance. Yeah. And so it was interesting to kind of see that come out today.
Let's take a quick second. When we come back, we'll talk about some of that. So as you mentioned, Tim Bontemps of ESPN put together a pretty, I thought it was a very informative piece on what security might look like out there in Orlando. Now, the response on Twitter was, I read the room. Why is there going to be such a police, such an obvious police presence out there in Orlando for this? But, you know, the reason for police and former special ops people and all the extra security is actually to keep people out of the bubble. It's not so much to keep NBA players in the bubble. It's to keep the public away from those players. And even when players go out into the public, they're going to be escorted with people whose jobs it is to make sure that the public doesn't make its way too close in proximity to the NBA's players, because that's how this looks. If they're going to do this as safely as possible, this is the stuff that you're going to have to see.
And it's just putting high profile people in a tight spot together. I mean, we know if it's a Super Bowl or if it's the Academy Awards, the Olympics, or anytime you put a lot of people that everybody knows in an area, there's issues of, you know, terrorism or just, you know, people storming it or whatever it is. So we're going to have a lot of people in one single location for a long time. Of course, the security is going to be beefed up. And as Bontemps reported today, it's not just police officers. It's also federal agents and Department of Homeland Security.
Former special ops.
Special ops. So the NBA, I think, Adam Silver, when he talked about the amount that has had to go in to make this as safe as possible, it's costing a lot of money. And so when he talked about, look, canceling the season, a lot of people think it's a matter of like black and white, oh, you're going to make a bunch of money if you do this. They've had to spend so much money that they're not even going to make, according to Adam Silver, make that much money. But again, if there is such a thing as just sort of that forward momentum and getting the season and resolving the season that we've had and all those other things. But yeah, looking at the details of it today, players, when they go off campus, will be accompanied by security, or at least I don't know if accompanied is the right word, but sort of protected, followed, you know, so they'll have security if they want to go out to like select areas around the park or what have you. And again, having to schedule those types of things in advance. And then if they're on the inside of the bubble, I think because the NBA wants to keep the inside of the bubble as sort of natural life as possible, that will be the team security. Those things inside the bubble, they hope that life can feel somewhat normal. It's just when you're going out. And also, as you mentioned, keeping people from coming in.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, if the players are going to sign off on this, they have to feel as safe as possible, right? And there is inherent, there's a feeling of unsafeness that comes with this inherently because of the situation that they're going to be playing in Orlando. But, you know, if you can make sure that players know that, hey, the outside, all that other noise, we're going to do everything that we can possibly do to make sure you don't feel that in here. And then also, you know, on those occasions where if it's prearranged and it's, you know, the kind of thing that we are allowing players to go out and do out in the public or team personnel to do out in the public, we, even when you go out there, we are going to have people around you so that you feel safe out there as well, and also make it safe for the people who you're coming back to in that bubble. Like, this is, and look, this is all going to also be negotiated. This is going to be something that the players union, that, you know, maybe they aren't comfortable with having some kind of security out there in the public whenever the players make their way out there for whatever reason. And you know, the thing I've always kind of come back to is, if and when we learn of what these protocols are actually going to be, when we finally see this in action, it's going to have been something that the players union negotiated and the league felt safe, you know, made the league feel safe in doing this as well. So when you take those things into account and the league is willing to assume, and the players and the coaches are willing to assume the risk involved with playing during a pandemic, like, at some point, I feel like we have to step back and say, if this is what their safety looks like, and if this is what they're willing to risk to continue this league going in the direction that it was going in, or at least try to recover or stop it from going backwards too far, I don't really know if it's for us to say, no, this is wrong, you should not be doing this.
Yeah, yeah. And also, man, there's another part of this. We're talking about months, and I think it's something like 6 or 7 weeks, because after the first round of the playoffs, that's when family members can start to arrive and come, mm-hmm. and teams will be able to see loved ones. We're talking about 6 or 7 weeks. I don't think that part of this has been talked about enough, that, you know, Anthony, you have a family. You're away from mm-hmm. them for 3 or 4 days. That's a really long time. It starts to feel 5, 6, 7 days. You're away from your kid. It starts to feel really, really long. So 6, 7 weeks, there's going to be an emotional sort of toll on here that I don't think even the players involved are fully prepared for. I think they're trying to prepare for it. I think there's a lot of them that know that's going to be a challenge. But when it actually gets to be the third week, when it actually gets to be you're down 2-1 in a series and there's pressure and all you can do is FaceTime the loved ones, I think that's going to be a real – I think that's going to be really, really tough for these players.
Absolutely. It's funny. We were I have always been more on the side of, like, if this is what they consider safe, then it's not really for me to judge, right? And I've also really been on the side of, if you're going to do this, you have to have a pretty hardline stance on what a bubble is, how we're defining a bubble. And then when it kind of came out, and this is where I got to point out my own hypocrisy, when it came out that, yeah, if you get credentialed and if you get sent to Orlando as a member of the media, this is what it would look like for you too. Then it kind of really set in for me, because Avery's first birthday is coming up August 5th.
Right.
That falls within that time where I wouldn't be able to come back, be here for that, and then also go back out to Orlando. That's not something that would really be allowed. And that's where, you know, it really felt real. Like, dang, these guys are going to be away for quite some time. They all, especially players, tend to have younger families, you know, young growing families that it's really hard to get away from. And yeah, from just a very human element to this, that's going to be something to really keep tabs on, is how do these guys respond to that?
And I want to read one of the lines here from Bontemps' article. He says, for any off-campus events that are organized for leisure purposes, so a player or team wanting to go off for leisure purposes, league security mm-hmm. will be supplemented by former Special Operations Forces personnel in order to, and this is the quote here, provide a scalable safety bubble. Yeah. So they're already thinking about this, that you have a bubble, and as big as this campus is for you to be able to go and play golf and ride boats and swim or do whatever, mm-hmm. after 7, 8 weeks, 3 months, even that big bubble is going to feel like a small one. And so the opportunity to go out and, as they put it, make it the bubble scalable. So, okay, now we can create the safe zone with security and decontamination and everything else. That's the idea. And I think it's really smart. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we're going to send you guys off into the weekend with some fun thinking about Vince Carter and some of the other best dunkers in the history of our game. I say our game, but it's not really like our, I didn't play the same basketball though. like Vince Carter play.
Anthony, we've seen you play basketball. We've seen it, man. Kyle Kuzma has seen it.
Yeah, right? He did. He said, you know, you make some, you miss some. Just a little too much English on that shot.
A little too much English. Not enough English, to be honest with you. Not enough English.
Should just like put some Spanish on it, maybe. This is like anything other than what I did.
Vince Carter, right. Man. Vince Carter. He's been in the league since I was like four. That's not.
He's true. Been in the league. League for a His long career time. Has been able to drink for a full year.
There you go. Now you nailed it.
It's so crazy. It's insane how long he has been in the NBA for. And it's also been kind of funny because we've been covering the sport here for long enough to where we've seen kind of, we've aged as well as the game that we cover. And it was funny to see the number of people who are like, dang, I am now older than every other NBA player. Yeah. Every active NBA player now. Before we get into like the
Do you remember Windows 98?
What's that?
Do you remember? It was Windows 95 and Windows 98,
yeah.
Right?
There was a 98. Yeah.
Windows 98. That's when he came into the league. Think about what that looked like. You can pull it up right now. For some of you youngins have no idea what I'm talking about. Pull up Windows 98 tutorial on YouTube or something, and you'll see what the computer was when Vince Carter entered the league.
Do we have Clippy in that one?
We might have had. I don't think that was even Clippy yet. I think Clippy arrives much later. This is like MS Paint and Minesweeper. Minesweeper was all the rage.
Oh man!
All these players—they're not focused on the game. They're busy up all night playing Minesweeper.
Did you ever win a game of Minesweeper? I was never capable.
Well, of course, yeah, man. You have to be really smart. You have to do the math.
Oh well,
expert level, baby.
Whoops. What are you gonna remember Vince Carter for though? Like obviously it's probably gonna be something dunk related, but what are you gonna like? Yeah, well, but like is there a specific dunk? Is it is it the dunk contest?
So people will talk about the dunk over 7'2" Weiss, right? I think it was a Frederick mm-hmm. Weiss. Well, I can't remember. Weiss. That was a great one. There's the Lonzo Mourning dunk. This one I think is an underrated one. Cocks it back as he goes to him, knocks him over and dunks on him. That's great.
Also but like dunked behind his head.
Bunked behind his head. Yeah, he had some crazy ones, but the dunk I will think of the most in the dunks, I should say, is the 2000 dunk contest, which to me, I said this on another show. Dunking is, we talk about the basketball being an art form, and sometimes it is. It's not always an art form, but sometimes it is. Vince Carter's 2000 NBA dunk competition, every single dunk was a work of art. Poetry in motion, and there's perfection, you know, one try. With ease, didn't just sneak it over the rim, just perfect, like fluidity, artistry. It was incredible. So that's what I'll think of. The best dunk contest performance I've ever seen.
I the thing I'm always going to remember, especially during Vince Carter's prime, was he gave you a reason to watch SportsCenter. Like this was pre-internet highlight, right? This was hey, you could hop on Twitter and you can see what dunk just happened or anything like that. This was, you know, especially when he played for the Nets, you know, or when he played for the Raptors, you would turn on SportsCenter. And back then, like top 10 was something that you checked in and watched like every night. And then they had like the weekly top 10. Then they also had like the not top 10. But Vince Carter, you know, during basketball season was reason enough to tune into SportsCenter just to see what kind of insane play he made that night. And more often than not, it felt like he more than made up for whatever decision that led into that decision. It was so cool to watch him. The extension he would get on his dunks, I just don't know if we're ever really going to see that.
It wasn't even the extension. It was the effortlessness. Like a lot of guys dunk it. Like Kobe is the ultimate to me because Kobe has some incredible in-game dunks, but they always look like he was trying as hard as he could. Like he had to give 110% to get up to the level that he did. And Jordan, I think, flew through the air. It was very effortless. You know, he kind of flew. But Vince Carter was a whole other level. It didn't look like he was jumping very hard. He always jumped really high, and he never even dunked it like he was reaching. It just was kind of like a boom, easy, got it. Had room to spare.
Yeah. Vince Carter once said, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard in basketball. He said, because they asked him, you know, your dunks, he had just dunked the night before, or there was a clip of him windmilling before a game or something like that. And they're like, how can you still do this at this age? Like, what kind of wear and tear does that put on your legs? And he goes, well, you know, the wear and tear doesn't come from jumping up very high. The wear and tear comes from landing from how high I'm jumping. And I'm like,
right, yeah,
that is so. Yeah,
that is insane.
I remember hearing that. I was like, there's nothing that, and it was just, it was such a matter of fact thing that he was saying, but it's just, there's nothing that will ever sum up the differences in his athleticism to the way that we think of athleticism anyway better than that. So who's your Vince Carter? Is he your best dunker of all time? Is your favorite?
He's the best dunker of all time, in my opinion. You know, my like live watching experience where I really paid attention only goes back to about, you know, 90, 95 or so. I'm born in 84. So maybe even a little bit later than that. There's enough film on Michael Jordan that I can say pretty comfortably that I think he's certainly in my top five. I think Dominique Wilkins, Dr. J, these guys are probably also in my top from those eras. But if we go after that, LeBron James is up there for me. Zion Williamson, I think, is going to be. I think Zion Williamson is the only guy that I've actually thought has a chance to top Vince. I think he jumps really as high as Vince, and he weighs as much as Charles Barkley, so he's up there. You know, Sean Kemp, clearly in my list there. J.R. Smith, sneaky great dunker in his day.
Yeah,
he has some great in-game dunkers. And then my last one here that I'll leave, I'm sure I'm missing a ton out, but my last one that I'll share with you, and not as good enough a player. All these other guys are like great players also as great dunkers. But Gerald Green has some of the best dunks that I've ever seen, both dunk contests, but also in-game dunks. The one where he is like almost a full head above the rim and windmills the alley-oop from half court is one of the most insane displays of athleticism I've ever seen.
So he's good. I mean, you have to mention Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine, just like given what they've done in recent years. Zach LaVine to me is somebody like, you talk about effortlessness.
Yeah.
Getting up in the air, especially when he jumps off of the 1 foot, right? And he has a bit of a runway. I love seeing guys who, when they have the opportunity to dunk, the crowd knows it.
Right? Yeah.
When LaVine is dunking in Chicago, when he used to dunk back in Minnesota, where he would have a breakaway and everybody's like, oh my God,
we're
about to see something incredible. And then he would do that. So I think LaVine is in that conversation.
But I missed Blake Griffin. He belongs in there.
The Mozgov.
He had like a 2-year run where he was just getting everybody.
Yeah. Poor like Mozgov became a verb.
Yeah. You got Mozgov'd.
DeAndre Jordan, just for what he did to, I think big guys tend to, you know, get swallowed up. Like JaVale McGee's slam dunk contest, I forget what year it was, which, you know, the year where he dunked on two baskets at the same time. Like, just
come on, man. Come on. We just put JaVale McGee. We just had this incredible conversation about all these great dunkers, and you just threw out JaVale McGee.
Dude, what he did in that slam dunk contest. Like, go back and watch him.
Oh, my goodness, man.
Pretty incredible.
I can't believe I had to listen to this. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, like, we tend to overlook big guys, right? Like, when it comes to dunking, because they're just big, and you think, like, they should be able to do that kind of stuff. But yeah, I wouldn't put JaVale in this class. I'm just saying, like, that. For the
DeAndre Jordan is definitely up for a big. He had a good run in there.
I also think Kobe, like, Kobe's stuff that he was able to do when he dunked on Yao. I remember specifically, it was also a fun stretch there during Sean Bradley's run
where he was just getting,
where it seemed like everyone, just everybody was trying to dunk on Sean Bradley. Yeah. So shouts to Sean Bradley for his addition to the game of basketball. But I just, all of the guys that we're talking about, I think Vince has a pretty sizable gap between them.
I think Zion is that right there, though. The crazy thing about Zion is he really does jump.
Are you an ESPN executive? Like, am I just finding this out?
Hey, man, there's a reason ESPN is pushing this. It's not because they really want New Orleans, the New Orleans market to really tune in. Like, they're pushing it because he really is legitimately that unique of an athletic specimen and player. I mean, great player as well. But his dunk, he has one dunk at Duke, the 360, where it's – he finishes the 360, pauses in the air, and then looks down at the rim to dunk it. And it's just, it's probably, in some ways, it's on par with Vince Carter's reverse windmill 360 because of how easily he did it. It wasn't like an almost, he was so good. Zion has a chance, man. He's got a chance.
That was one of the bummers with how much time he's missed this year, was because remember Blake Griffin, had some insane dunks at Oklahoma. And then, you know, the talk was, man, just imagine what he's going to look like with pro training, right? Pro athleticism and as his body fully matures. And then he came into the league and like he became one of the game's best dunkers ever. And Zion was that same thing. When I was watching him at Duke, I was thinking, God, if this is what he's doing in college, just imagine what it's going to look like 2-3 years from now, right? Yeah. Maybe even as soon as next year. So yeah, I could see that with Zion. I don't know that Zion is ever going to look as cool as Vince looked. Vince looks
I disagree with this. Vince is like floats through the air. It's like the MJ thing. They float through the air and there is a coolness to him. But Zion, it doesn't make sense. It looks like it's defying it. It looks like it's defying all rules that we know. Like what you expect when you see him going to the like motion of dunking is not what you see when he starts jumping. It's he jumps so much higher, hangs in the air so much longer than you expect. So we'll see. The funny thing is I was going through a bunch of these Vince dunks and he was a great dunk. He could still dunk even in his final year.
Yeah.
But so many of his great ones came in those first handful of years, either in Toronto or his first, all the way up until his first year or two in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And you do think like for a jumper athletically, you really do hit your jumping prime at like 24 or 25. Yeah. Like it's gone quick. And then after that, even if you're an athlete, you can do some things. But so Zion, his best years are probably these next few.
Does LeBron never doing a slam dunk contest, how do you feel about that?
I hate it. I think it's a blemish on his resume. And I don't mean resume as in like for his legacy. I just mean the dunk contest is for the fans. It really is a fan service. And him not doing it is one of those things where I think, man, it wasn't about you. It was the one opportunity to be like, thanks, guys. I'm going to put on a show. So I don't hold it against him. It's not a big deal. But I do wish he did it. I think it was a mistake that he didn't.
It's one of like the all-time kind of bummers, right? NBA, yeah, like not, really not you know, like not you know, not compared to some of the actual like really sad stuff that has happened in NBA history, but like you know, if you just look at like, God, that really kind of sucks that we never got to see that. That really sucks.
So 100%. A couple other round out here: David Thompson, Nate Robinson.
Nate
Robinson was a very good one. Even Dwight Howard, I know like he's not the most fun guy and he's a big, but he was just, I mean, he dunked everything. Giannis, it's not that he jumped so high, it's that he dunks from so far away.
Yeah.
And so he's one of the more interesting dunkers. If you just talked about who has the greatest collection of posters, I think number one would probably be Shaq. Dwight and Sean, some of these guys may be up there, but Giannis probably right up there in terms of guys that have tried to block him and he's dunked on him because they did not realize he could reach it.
Well, yeah, I think, and it's pretty crazy to say this, but I really think his athleticism catches other NBA players by surprise. Mm. Like he takes off and they think like, oh yeah, like he'll just lay this up, right? Because NBA players know that this is why business decisions get made in NBA games, right? They see somebody taking off from certain parts of the court and they say, all right, I'm gonna duck my head under the rim over here and get out of the way here. But with Giannis, they'll go up and challenge it because they think, no, there's no way he's gonna dunk from out there. So yeah, I do think by the time his career is over, we're gonna look at some of the best posters ever from Giannis. Absolutely. All right, that's gonna do it for this episode and this week's episodes of the Locked On NBA podcast. As we mentioned earlier, we are getting closer, 2 weeks away from teams heading out to Orlando. We'll see what that means moving forward. We already know that, you know, a team like the Lakers is trying to find a replacement for a pretty important role player, right? So that in and of itself should, in my opinion, lead to an asterisk on whoever wins the championship this year. But you know, that's just me. That's just me.
You're
a hater. Have a great weekend out there. Stay safe. And Adam and I will talk to you again next week.